2, episode 19 of Running to Disney. If it sounds like I'm in a hollowed-out shell, I'm actually in the living room of my new house that has nothing on the walls, and we're waiting to get some new furniture, so it's kind of echoey in here. Anyway, what we're going to have today is the second half of the interview with Lisa Colvin, and finish up that interview. I hope you enjoyed the first half. I've got some pretty good feedback so far about the quality of the interview and what she has to offer. Great, great person. And we'll play the rest of that now. And then after that, we'll have a song and a few voicemails from a couple of special people, a few first-time callers, and some of the quote-unquote regulars, especially the vegan running mom, Megan, who called from Boston Marathon twice. So really happy she did that. And then we'll close it out and we'll start working on episode 20. I am just back from the Nashville Country Music Marathon weekend. I ran the half marathon yesterday, and I'm not pleased with my result. I ran it in 2:49. That's 2 minutes off of setting a new PR. The fastest I've run a half is 2:48, and I was really hoping to break 2:30, but I'll deconstruct the whole race, and I took audio for the whole race, and I'll do that for episode 20, so I don't want to take away too much suspense, but I'm just back from a very hot, very hilly half marathon in Nashville, so we'll have an all-Nashville episode in episode 20. Anyway, here is the rest of the interview with Lisa.
I got a couple questions about the tri-specific questions.
Okay.
There's some questions about how much equipment do you take to races when you were racing? Did you have 2 or 3 bikes, or I mean, how was that? How did you do that?
Well, like when I train, I have 2 bikes. Now, when I first started, I only had 1 bike, and I just had clip-on aero bars. Mm-hmm. But the more I got into the sport, the more specific I knew the bicycles needed to be. So, 90% of my training is on a road bike. It doesn't have aero bars. It's just like what you see at the Tour de France.
Sure.
Okay, those kind of bicycles. Also at the Tour de France, you see time trial bicycles.
Right.
Which have the aero bars and the guys wearing the pointy helmets and all the stuff to make you aerodynamic.
Right.
And you really reach that kind of aerodynamic advantage when you're over 23 miles per hour. Okay. Now, it can be 22.5, but, you know, when you start to, I mean, those guys are riding 30 miles. I mean, it's just amazing how they can ride so fast, you know. I mean, after all of those thousands of miles, and still be able to, you know, to ride 30 miles an hour, you know, 28, 30 miles an hour,
yeah.
You know. But for races, I race on a time trial bike. And so it's pretty, it seems like a lot of equipment. Only because a lot of the stuff that you bring is accessory stuff. Like when you set your area up in what's called the transition area, and transition area means when you swim, you come to your area, where your bike is, and you take off your goggles and your swim cap.
Right.
If it's an open water swim, and you put on your bike, your helmet clips the chin strap on your helmet. But that's like a big rule, you know, is to make sure you at least keep your head together. So, you know, get your chin strap clipped, you know, put on your biking shoes, and then go and then take your bicycle out and then mount. They have what's called a mount and a dismount line. So it's the mount line means, okay, roll past this line and get on your bicycle so it makes it equal for everyone. So it would just be utter chaos. Everyone was trying to jump on the bicycle right there where they pull it off the rack.
Oh, so they want to get you away before you... Yeah, I got you. I see what
they're... Exactly. They want to get you away from that transition area so everybody has the same opportunity to get onto their bicycle and get riding than to have to, you know, maybe somebody falls down or wrecks or gets their bikes tangled up inside that transition area. So really, at that area, all I typically have is a towel, my biking shoes, my running shoes, a race belt with my number on it. Then on top of my biking shoes, I always put my helmet and a pair of glasses and some. I use Hammer Nutrition, so Hammer Gel is what I use. So So, and I took that, you know, just into my my tri uniform, you know, just on the leg. And in sprint distance and Olympic distance, I mean, you need fuel, but I mean, you know, you don't need nearly as much as you're going a half iron or iron.
I got you.
So you really kind of play with that over time. But really, the transition area, I mean, it's pretty simple. It's just, like I said, it's all the accessory stuff, like, you know, having the bike rack and the pump and the, you know, make sure you get your numbers all on your bicycle and on your helmet and on your body, and make sure that your chain is greased. And so you bring all of this extra stuff, you know, just to get in the area and get prepared to race. So that's probably the biggest part. In triathlon, you know, the most expensive part is the bike. You know, I mean, what I would tell any beginning triathlete is just to try to find a second or a third or fourth hand bicycle that is a road bicycle if you can. I mean, now, if all you have is a mountain bike or a hybrid bicycle, go for it. Yeah. I mean, it's something that has wheels and that you can turn the cranks. It does not matter. You're just trying to get into shape.
Yeah.
But if you have the opportunity to buy a bicycle, and you know, college students like to get into it, but it's always difficult for them to get into it because the bike's expensive. But a lot of times you'll have people that are trying to get rid of their equipment, and they'll be selling a really nice bike that you can get for less than $500. I mean, for a fact, you know, a cardiothoracic surgeon here in town, Dr. Keith White, and his wife, Katie White, do triathlons, and Katie had just upgraded to another bike, so she really felt like she wanted to give back to the sport and sold her old time trial bike to one of my students that I'm helping train for $250.
Wow.
So here she gets this wonderful bike, you know, that, you know, probably on eBay would still cost you, you know, $750, and that, you know, she felt compelled to, you know, to give someone else a chance for a little of no money.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, I mean, that's what I would tell anybody to do is get if you can find one on eBay or a bike swap or even your local bike clubs or your bike shop. They may know people that have, you know, old equipment or what we would consider old, but will be brand new to you that you can learn how to ride the bicycle on. So that's the hardest thing, I think, in riding the bike and learning how to, you know, use clipless pedals and how to ride with people and how to draft and how to ride on aero bars. I mean, it's really good to find a group of individuals that will be patient with you and to be able to teach you those kinds of things. Because for me, you know, those are the basic skills that I needed to learn. I mean, I needed to learn how to shift the gears. I mean, I need to know how to go to the big chain ring to the small chain ring in the front, and how to use the gears in the back, because you should never fight the bicycle. And the bicycle is just part of your anatomy, and you know you need your partners with the bike, so you shouldn't be fighting the bike. So for any beginning triathlete, you know, if you can find a road bike, you know, and make sure it's the right size, you can always go to a bike store, and a bike store will tell you what bike size is right for you, even if you don't buy a bike from them, because they know eventually you will probably be back.
Yeah, right.
Or you go on a site like Trek, and they'll tell you approximately, you know, your height, and based on your inseam, you know, you would ride this certain bike. So I ride a 52-centimeter bike. And that just talks about, you know, how large the frame is.
Yeah. Is it a Trek?
Yep, I ride a 52-centimeter Trek for my road bike. And actually, my frame is a little bit older. I ride carbon fiber bicycles. I started off on steel, and I changed over to aluminum, and then I went over to carbon fiber. And that just is very, for me, it was good because it's a little, you know, it dampens a lot of the road, and it's not quite as jarring on my, you know, on my body. But some people like a stiffer bike. They like a titanium bicycle. Or they do still like aluminum or steel. So it's just kind of what your preference is.
Yeah.
But I ride a Trek for my road bike. my road frame is old. I mean, I would consider it to be old. I got it in 97, I think it was. But the components, I mean, everything but the frame is new.
Yeah.
So every, I mean, you know, basically the frame is still good. The Trek 5200. And, you know, the only thing that's left on that bike from the original bike is the frame.
Wow.
My time trial bike is an Aegis. And so they're both American companies. And, you know, I just decided I wanted to buy American.
Right.
Plus, Aegis was a great company that made very super specialized bikes for time trialing.
Huh.
And so that's AEGIS. It was a great bike, and had a guy named Dave Bunce, and he used to be a bike wrench for a guy named John Cobb. And Johnny Cobb is kind of one of those iconic figures in bicycling as far as aerodynamics is concerned. So he was kind of the first person that took, you know, Lance Armstrong into the wind tunnel at Texas A&M.
Wow.
and got him into a true aerodynamic position, you know, and that's really, Lance Armstrong really changed the landscape of how people trained for, you know, multi-stage events. So, you know like the Grand Tours.
Yeah.
Where you have at least 4 days of bicycle racing, but these are like 3 weeks of bicycle racing.
Wow.
You know, and then you have the classics, which are 1 day events, so which are over a longer mileage. So Armstrong started off as an elite triathlete and one of the best in the world.
I didn't know.
He started off as a swimmer and kind of like me, and he was at the age of 16. He called Shreveport. He's from Austin, and wanted to enter their event. And he wanted them to, if his mom would bring him, he wanted them to, you know, comp his entry fee. And they said, "You're 16. We're not comping your entry fee." He says, "Look," and he said, "Fine. If I win, you comp it for me now." And then this is a story that I get, so we'd have to actually Twitter Armstrong to see if this was a true story. But his mom brought him over, they comped him his entry fee, and he still holds the record for the River Cities Triathlon in Shreveport, Louisiana, where one of the national championships back in the 90s was held.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, so he started off as a swimmer and a triathlete. But I think he got to a point where he realized that he would never make money, like a living, being a triathlete. So that's when he switched over to straight bicycling.
Oh, wow.
And so when he started to ride bikes, and then when he was diagnosed with testicular cancer, you know, if you look at him before he was diagnosed with cancer, and then afterwards, his whole body kind of changed, which was actually for the better. So, I mean, you know, his body changed in a way that really made him a world-class triathlete. I mean, world-class cyclist. He's always been a world-class athlete because he has great genetics. I mean, his VO2 max, which is an extremely good indicator of aerobic capacity and ability to do, you know, hard, sustained work over time,
yeah,
is one of the highest in the world. And has been since he was measured when he was, I don't know, probably 12 or 13 years old.
Right.
I mean, so it's not something for him that just happened overnight. He's been a world-class athlete since he was a little kid. So, you know, I mean, it's just, he's just one of those phenoms.
Wow.
And, you know, again, something to be said about genetics, but a lot to be said about hard work and dedication and always the willingness to try something to better the sport. And so he was that change agent for bicycle racing, multiple weeks like the Tour de France, where you become a super specialist, but you have to do them all. It's kind of like triathlons. You have,
yeah,
to ride in a pack, you have to do an individual time trial, and you have to do a team time trial.
Right.
So, I mean, that's three totally separate, basically, sports and events. Which is totally suited for him. So, yep, he actually started off as a triathlete. You know, after he quit cycling, He ran a marathon and qualified for the Boston Marathon and ran the Boston Marathon, and then has now decided to go back to cycling, and it was looking pretty good for him, and then he had a crash. Yep, and it was a lot worse than they had anticipated, and so they fixed it in Austin, and so it's been kind of nice. It's really nice to kind of get a glimpse into his life and other people's lives too on Twitter, because you really get to see, you know, what they're doing and how they handle the training regiments. And I mean, here he has this huge plate and all these screws and all this stuff, and he's still riding his bike. You know, you're like, oh my gosh, I mean, you're insane, you know. But I mean, you know, that's just him. I mean, you know, his pain tolerance is up there in the stratosphere, and just something that he decided, you know, that he was going to do.
Now it's
about cancer awareness. So
yeah. Well, let me ask you this, because I'm going to release this episode the Saturday before Boston, and you've run.
Oh,
Boston,
yeah,
right?
Cool. I have.
Now, where did you qualify? What race did you qualify for Boston?
I went. It is a funny. It is a funny story. Not funny. It's kind of a sad funny story. It's, I qualified at the Toronto Marathon, so I went to Canada, because it just so happened that, you know, what happened was I was training for the Houston Marathon. I had run a couple marathons before. I was more training for like 10Ks and half marathons, so that's a quantum leap. Just go from, oh yeah, I can run a half marathon all the way to the marathon. I mean, really, the marathon really starts at 21 or 22 miles. I mean, that's where you really start having to really dig deep. And I thought, this is not going to be a big deal. I'm just going to qualify. Again, wrong. Okay, so I went, was getting ready for Houston Marathon to qualify. I was right, I was going to easily qualify. Shouldn't have been any problem. All I had to run was 3:30. It was no big deal. New Year's Eve, walking the two dogs in El Dorado, Arkansas. We jog down some stairs, I jump onto a landing, turn my ankle and break it.
Oh gosh.
10 days out. 8 months of training down the toilet.
Wow.
In a half of a second. So, I mean, you know, here I am, I have 2 months, you know, Milo and Harry, you know, they're girl dogs, but my husband made them for the cub announcers, you know, but, Milo and Harry, you know, they're looking at me like going, what are you doing? Why are you crawling on the ground and rolling around? Why is your leg like all like been out of shape and all huge? So I crawl back up the stairs. Nobody would give me a ride because they thought I was drunk. I guess. I mean, because here I was rolling. I played like I was shot. I played like, you know, I was crawling on the ground. I mean, I was in the play yard of an elementary school ground. So I thought, certainly, somebody on this big street is going to stop and see me and give me a ride. Nobody would stop. And I'm like 3/4 of a mile from the house. So, I mean, you know, when you hurt something, I mean, it hurts to hop. So I just kind of crawled along. I saw somebody go into a house, and I knocked on the door. And they, again, I guess I thought that I was drunk. They would not answer the door. I'm like, oh, please, dear Lord, help me get home. A lady from Louisiana. Here I'm in Arkansas. A lady from Louisiana stopped in her brand spanking new Cadillac. I am muddy from head to toe. I got two, you know, mutt dogs that are muddy and wet. And she's like, honey, what is wrong? I'm like, I broke my leg, you know. And she goes, girl, get up in this car. I was like, no, it's a brand new car. She goes, it's a car. Who cares? So she throws my mutts and me in the car, and that's my story. So I didn't get to run that marathon. So all that training went just down the tubes in just a split second. Had surgery, had my ankle fixed, and trained and had a great fix. And 7 months later, I went to Toronto and qualified for the 2000 Boston Marathon. So that's the one that I was going for 99, but I really wanted the 2000 because I wanted to either defer, because I just wanted to run the year 2000 one.
Yeah.
So that's the year that that I qualified and ran Boston. And so it was a phenomenal event. I'm not elite enough of a, I'm a 315 marathoner. So, I mean, I'm not considered in my age group or for women to be an elite runner. I'm a sub-elite runner. So, I didn't get a number that was high enough up. It takes 3 or 4 miles in a big event. And you know this too.
Yeah, yeah.
In a big event like that to really get going, because you're like, going, oh my God, I'm going so slow. It's like, I'm never going to get going here.
Right.
Then you overcompensate and you go a little bit too fast and you kind of say, oh crap, pull back. But even with that, and even me starting a little further back then, I wanted to. It was a fabulous experience. I would not trade it for anything, and the feeling that you had when you finished your marathon, was equivalent for when I finished Boston. But, any marathon finish is just an elating, type of event. It's just so momentous, and when you get that finisher's knuckle around your neck, it's just almost, you're just like, wow, but ow, this is going to really hurt, Those last 4 or 5 miles just eat you up. And they do me anyway. Some people, they get up the next morning and go for a jog. Nuts. They're a physiological, freak, their bodies can do it. I can't. I'm going to stand in cold water. If I'm close to an ocean, I will get in the coldest. If it's a winter marathon, I will go and stand in the ocean. I'll stand in an ice bath, walk downstairs backwards, all the whole shebang.
Yeah.
So, but Boston was the same way, just to get that finisher's medal. I cried, and it was just, and that was pretty much it for me. I ran 3 or 4 marathons after that, but it was mostly with just friends and just to have fun, because again, to train for a marathon to run really fast, it's very, it's a minimalist life and it's very regimented, and you have to be very careful with everything that you do, because one false move, everything that you've done is gone.
Yeah, well, I was...
But you just can't think about it, and you experience something similar.
Yeah, yeah, well, late in the training for the Disney, I was scared to death of stepping in a pothole or stepping off the curb or...
Oh, I know.
It was just, you're 3 weeks out and you're just, it's like you're walking on eggshells because, you've gone all this time. And you're almost it gets in your head.
It does. It really does. And that's, when I was coaching, I was kind of sending you those signals like, don't do anything different, don't deviate from the plan. That's right. Do not play soccer. Do not do any of these things because, and you probably didn't even know I had this, this experience
I I've seen the Boston poster and medal in your office, but I didn't know you had to wait,
I had to wait another year to be able to actually qualify and to be able to go because of one, just ding-dong move, something innocent as walking your dog. So I'm like, don't walk your dog! Don't do this! You're like, are you psycho, Lisa? What is your deal?
Yeah.
I'm like, but just stick to the plan. Don't do anything else. Don't change your shoes. Don't do anything.
Yeah.
But you don't feel good, take off. It's just, and that was really based on my past personal experience of having that unfortunate event happen. And so it really does play into, even as I'm coaching people now, I try not to let that be a pervasive thing as it gets close to their A event or a big event, like, oh my God, don't do anything, just sit down. Okay, So, because if you think about those things, it's something sound to happen to you. So
you're gonna fulfill the prophecy. You're gonna do it yourself.
Exactly. I remember, a guy that I was training with here in Monroe, or I was helping train, and he was getting ready to run the New Orleans Marathon. And I walked out to get my paper, and he's sitting in my front yard. In the front yard, I'm like, this is like 3 days before the marathon. I'm like going, what are you doing? And why are you sitting on my paper? You know? He's like, I just pulled my calf muscle.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I just sat there and I cried. He didn't cry, I cried.
Oh, wow.
Because I just know, I'm like, oh no. All this training, and it took him about 9 months to get to that point. But then, you know, then he ended up, you know, 6 months later successfully, you know, doing well in another marathon. But still, you know, and it's just hard. I mean, I think it was harder on me when you got hurt and was unable, when you were unable to, you know, basically we had to start all over again.
Yeah, I was going to do the Disney half, and then it closed.
Yep.
And then I was
exactly.
We decided we were going to do St. Jude's half. And then then my Achilles went crazy. So, yeah. And then
exactly.
Exactly.
It's basically like not starting all over, but, I mean, pretty darn close because, I mean.
That's 6 weeks without running, I think. That's.
You lose it all.
I just gotten addicted to it, then I couldn't do it. It was driving me crazy. So.
Oh, I know. And that's kind of, you know, where I am. And I totally understand, you know, when you have an injury, you know, you just, you know, that's just part of your life and your lifestyle.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to mentally, you know, get your, you know, head around, oh crap, you know, that goal is gone. Okay, I can either sit here and pout about it and feel sorry for myself, or I can, you know, pull myself up by the bootstraps and say, okay, I'm going to make something out of this.
Right.
And, you know, that's exactly what you did. I mean, you could have very easily, right at that time, I mean, that was a telltale moment. I mean, that was, you know, your turning point, I think. You could have either quit, or you could have, or you decided to go on, and that's what you did. And, I mean, look what you did.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you could have never said that if you would have turned the other cheek and just said, you know what, I'm just going to write this book,
sure. And
screw it. You know, I'm just going to give up, and I'm just not going to do it.
Right.
Even if you have, even if you get to a point in your athletic career that you have a debilitating injury that you can't do that sport anymore, I mean, you can still do other activities and still get back to the sport that you love.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, that's what's been really fulfilling and a blessing for me, is because I have 8 people now that are either students or members of the club that I'm a part of, which is Vantage Multisport, and I'm able now to train them. I mean, I swim with them in the pool, but I really can't ride hard with them. So, I mean, I can get, you know, in my truck and train them from my truck on the bicycle for their intervals. And it's really kind of fun, you know, because here I have an air horn and I'm telling them when to, you know, do their hard interval and sound the air horn, you know, to when they need to slow down. And so it has been, I mean, you know, I felt really sorry for myself because, I mean, you know, basically here I go from, you know, being one of the, you know, I mean, top athletes, you know, in the world to basically debilitated. I mean, not able to do anything, so I had to make a decision. You know, do I want to sit around and feel sorry for myself, or do I want to do something to make somebody else's life better?
Sure.
And you were actually the first athlete that came and asked me, hey, you know what, would you help me do this? And, I mean, you were my blessing.
I didn't know
you
that.
Know?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You were the first person that asked me, would you help me? Do you think you could write something up for me?
Yeah.
I'm like, yes. Happy to.
Now,
you know,
let me ask you this while we're talking about this. What, I mean, how did you, I mean, I know we essentially said, okay, how many days do you think I can run a week? And this
right.
is the goal, and this is how far we're out. So, I mean, how
right.
did you devise the plan from there? I mean, where'd you come up with the miles? And I mean.
Well, I just did it kind of based off of, you know, the research that I've done and success from beginners to elite athletes. And, you know, I ramped your mileage up over a period of time based on your, you know, current fitness level and the testing that we did on you in our laboratory.
Right.
And really, I mean, for me to be able to get baseline data from a human performance laboratory was pretty critical because I knew what your your physiological capacity, you know, currently was, but I knew what your capacity was. So I knew you were nowhere even near your training capacity, and so you were on the low end, so we had a lot of room to improve. So, you know, I based, you know, the program on, you know, the percentage that I thought that you could improve. And I just, and what I do with athletes is I always find out what is your A race? You know, where do you want to be peaked and tapered? Where do you want to run your, what event in the year? You pick one. Sometimes you pick two, but usually you're picking one big event that you want to do your absolute best at, and then you work backwards from there.
Right. Yeah, because
that's how I did it.
It's a good 2 or 3 months of just base miles, and then we got into.
Yeah.
Because it was
exactly.
Kind of killing me because I wanted to get marathon specific, but you know that would have been July and it would have done no good in January. So
that's exactly right. And so what I did was I like I do with everyone is I find out what your ultimate goal is and where you really want to perform well. Your one big A event, and then I work backwards to where you are then. So I knew that if I would have put you into a training program, that you would have physiologically broken down, no matter, you know, how much you went to see, you know, the massage therapist, Deacon Hansen. You know, I mean, he could do ART with you all day long, every day, and we still couldn't have kept you together.
Right.
You know, because your body just had to get used to running those kind of miles, you know, so it just had to be those steady, even pace miles with, you know, I mean, here and there some pickups or some striders, sure, just to kind of get you out of that pattern. But you really couldn't do any marathon specific training until you physiologically could handle those types of training sessions. And so, I mean, certainly with you, I mean, the pieces of the puzzle were for me, and with all the people that I train, is get some baseline physiological data, like VO2 max is always very nice, or VO2 peak is very nice information to get. What your heart rate maximum is, or your heart rate peak is, on a graded exercise test, if you're on a treadmill, if you're going to be a runner, or on a bicycle and a treadmill, if you're a triathlete, because your heart rates will be different, and the training zones are different for swimming, biking, and running.
Yeah.
So for you, with the marathoning, you know, it was great to have that data. And then you had the GPS information, so you could track all these things.
Right.
And from there, you know, I could decide, here's your A race, and here's the things that we need to do in between. And there's no way I can get you to the marathon until your body, you know, adjusts to basically pounding on it a little bit.
Right.
So once you were able to successfully, basically, you know, for me, for marathon training, a 10-miler is kind of that benchmark.
Yeah.
You know, once you can do a 10-miler or a 13-miler, you know, with relative ease and say, you know what, that wasn't really that bad. As soon as you told me that, that was it.
Yeah, we were there. Yeah, that's cool.
And so, and getting back to, you know, what you talked about earlier was, you know, it's funny how your perception changes. Now you're training for a half marathon and you're thinking, I'm going to go out for a 3 or 4 mile run. That's a waste of my time.
Yeah,
I mean, come on, Lisa. What are you smoking today? Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is it? This is all I'm going to do? I'm like, yeah, that's all you're going to do. And, so yeah, your perception changes, but the intensity also changes.
That's cool.
As you have probably noticed now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's knowing you only have so many miles. You can really, I mean, I can really kind of push it knowing I only have 3, so I'm just going to, you know, once I get a little bit of warm up, I'm just going to go, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And now we can do real interval training on the track because, you know, I mean, we can do interval training for marathoning on a track or with far legs or with tempo runs or, you know, any of those types of things. But, you know, for a 10K or a half marathon, you can really get on the track and do some real quality track work, and that's what you're doing now.
Yeah, 12,
and that's
really 12, 1800s and 6400s. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
12 400s and 6 200s is what I call not quality. I call it hell, Lisa. Yeah.
It's your own private hell.
Yeah, that was last Wednesday, and it was good.
And it was a hell of a workout, wasn't it?
It really was. Yeah. I mean, I wasn't dead at the end of it. I mean, I was dead enough, but it was like, hey, I can do this. So.
That's exactly right. And that's the whole point. It's like you're at the point now where you can do those types of things. And you're thinking, it's a different type of training than marathon training. So every event you do, if you were just training for 10K, you know, your training would be significantly different than what you're doing for a half marathon.
Right.
You know, just because the mileage is different and the requirements to run faster, because your goals now are different. It's not just the finish. It's to finish in a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
You know, so your expectations of the quality run that you have now is not just to finish. It's to finish with a certain goal in mind.
Yeah.
And that's a time goal. And that's a great place to be, because that means you've really taken the next step in your running odyssey.
Right. It's kind of cool. It really is.
Yeah.
Transitioning from just, you know, just getting through it to actually, you know, reaching a goal or trying to reach the goal. So.
Right, because I mean, your goal is not just to survive and finish anymore. It's to be able to run a specific time based on a training regimen, and you know, and if you don't reach that goal, we go back and look at the program and say, okay, what did we miss?
Right.
And then you put that piece in for the next time, and bam, there you got it.
Cool. Well, cool, Lisa. This has been great. You know, we've been going for an hour and 20 minutes.
How much?
Yeah, an hour and 20 minutes.
Oh, I did not know that. Oh,
no,
gosh.
This is cool. I'm either going to do one long episode or I'm going to split you over two. This is fantastic. I mean, it's been great.
Oh, my God.
I just looked down at the recorder and it was like an hour and 20. Dang. It didn't seem like we've been.
Wow.
This is awesome.
You know I can talk. I mean,
I know you
know that.
Oh, yeah. No.
And, you know I can talk.
It was all good.
I didn't realize it had been that long.
No, it was great. This is awesome.
This is fabulous. And, I mean, if you have listeners, you know, that you know, are interested in, you know, how to get started or training programs or, you know, just what do I do? I mean, who do I talk to? You know, they're more than welcome to, you know, write me emails.
Okay.
You know, emails is the easiest way to get me, and lcalvin@ulm.edu is the easiest way to get me, and I'm more than happy to, you know, lead, you know, the newbie or the super elite athlete, you know, down whatever path they want to.
Cool. Well, thanks so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
You are more than welcome. I'm just tickled to death that you would even want to have me on your podcast. I'm honored.
I've been bragging about you to all the Twitter people that I've talked to.
Oh, gosh. All your Twitter folks.
Yeah.
You are like the Twitter king, you know?
Well, I got to.
I love it.
I got to sit behind a desk all day, you know, and so it's in the background while I'm doing the work, and so I'm just. It's kind of a nice distraction. It keeps me from getting too bored, you know, when I'm doing paperwork and all. So.
That's exactly what I do. The same exact thing. I keep Twitter kind of going in the background, and you know, to kind of see what's going on and see what people are doing, because that's really. I need to be a little better, because I mean, my mind's so boring right now. It's like. Submit the desk, board, you know, grade the test, bye, you know. But yeah, I do the same thing. I put it in the background. So, but thanks for having me on. I mean, it's just a real honor for me, and just to be able to kind of share my experiences for my first 43 years of my life, you know, and in 43 more years, share the, you know, the 86th year.
That's true. Well, you're my friend and my coach, and I wanted to share you with everyone else, so. I do appreciate you doing this.
You're more than welcome. It is my honor. My honor.
Don't want to go home. Don't want to go home. Don't want to go home. No, never. From this lonely road. From this lonely road. You swore we'd sever. Yeah. Head out the window, watch the world go by. It's like a slideshow as I adjust the rearview mirror. Pull my hair back and lean over, rest my weary head on your shoulder. The wind is playing with my hair. So darling, lock the doors, put your heel to the floor. Don't you worry about the time, just take the wheel. This is how the wind must be. Shoulder blade move. And then, you strain your neck to check both ways. You slap the blinker. We're changing lanes again, again. Driving all night with a window down. Passing through sleepy ghost towns. I could be sleeping in one, two. Passing streetlights on the right hand. So we know where they stand. I'm so glad I'm here with you. Your heel to the floor. Drive me places I have never been before. Leave it all behind. There is more to this life. Don't you worry about the time. Just take. Like something's chasing after us, like hell itself is on our trail. Like a dream when something's chasing after me, and I can't run, the devil's on our tail. Yes, the devil's on our tail. So darling, lock the doors, put your heel to the floor.
Well, we got quite a bit of email over the past few weeks that I want to share a little bit with you now. One comes from a good old friend of ours, Jody, from Confessions of a Runner. If you never heard Confessions of a Runner, the podcast, it was fabulous. Jody took us on her running voyages and with a genteel spirit and just a welcoming nature that was just a delight to listen to each week. And just by chance, Jody and I met up at the Disney Marathon and ran the first half of it together in January. And it was like meeting an old friend, and we had a blast. But she is doing well and wants to let everybody know she's fine and doing great, and sends you all her best wishes. So here's some good feelings and good thoughts for Jody. Got an email from Mark. Mark wanted to drop you a quick line, let you know how much we appreciate your podcast and the time you put into it. Mark and a couple of his other friends are newbie runners and love listening to the podcast. They've moved past 5Ks and 10Ks, and now they're training for half and full marathons over the next 9-10 months. They found the website during a Google search last fall. Good to know Google's working. As they prepped for the Circle of Life 5K that they ran just this past January. While they were there, he cheered on his sister-in-law in the marathon and said it was a rush. Said he'd never been to the marathon event at Disney and it was contagious. A little bit about Mark. They love Disney World as much as anyone. They're both former cast members. Spent a few years working for Disney in the 90s and try to go to Orlando every 3 to 4 months. He also grew up in my wife's hometown of Panama City. But unfortunately, he went to a rival high school, and I haven't quite broken it to my wife that somebody who enjoys the podcast went to a rival high school from hers. Anyway, Mark's, I've already emailed Mark several times. I've got tons of questions about how Disney works, these little nuggets of how Disney does day-to-day operations, which fascinates me, how things work, those shows and podcasts and stuff about how things run and work and how you put them together and all that is a blast to me. So I've been peppering Mark with questions. Hopefully he'll keep listening, even though I keep bugging him about Disney. Anyway, Mark, I really, really appreciate your email. Keep writing and keep listening. And I got more questions for you, buddy. Steve has written in, says that mine is one of his favorite podcasts. Not favorite running, but podcast in general. So he enjoys the mix of Disney, family life, and running. I do appreciate that. That's great. He's married. He's got a young son. And he works somewhere in Orlando that I like to visit. Has a BA in history. Fantastic. We are going to rule the world someday as history majors. Enjoys the show, but he's also asking about good history podcasts, and he can't seem to find anyone with general searches. So what I'm going to do, because several people have asked about this, I'll put together a list and post them on the blog and also share them at the end of episode 20, some of the ones that I really like. One that you can go to right now that I adore, I think is fantastic, is called My History Can Beat Up Your Politics. And what he does is he takes political issues and traces the history of these issues to sort of break down conventional stereotypes or conventional wisdom about political issues and sort of trace what has happened in American history. It's a fabulous podcast. But I'll put a bunch of those on the blog and list them on episode 20. But Steve, I do appreciate your email. Courtney says, I want to thank you for taking time out to do the podcast. I randomly decided to do the half marathon in March, signed up, and have begun my training. I really appreciate that a normal person can train and complete these things. It definitely gives me the confidence to keep going, even though she's a little overweight and trying to lose a little weight. And so she wants to do the half next year, finish the half this year, and then next year she wants to do the full. Courtney, you will do it. I have every confidence that you're going to do it, and just keep running. That's all I can do. All I can say, if I can do this stuff, anyone can. I trust me. I'm proud and thrilled and honored that you would find something of value from what I have to say. So, anyway, I appreciate that, Courtney. Wendy from Minnesota, who also has a voicemail in this episode. Wrote, said, I realize you've been at the podcast thing for a while. Well, not really. I've been at it for a couple of months. I'm still a rookie. She's a brand new listener. She's burning through the episodes trying to catch up. She said she didn't want to catch up because then she would only get one a week instead of three or four. She's a new runner, just for only about a year, and she's going to do the half marathon in 2010. She loves Disney and has come to love running and could not believe there's a podcast that combines both. I'm trying to do better with the Disney part. I know it's been more running than Disney, but I'm really trying to put some more Disney in here. That's the whole reason I do the podcast. So I've got a little bit of stuff, so stay tuned. In a few minutes I'll have some. She used to hate running, but in January 2008, my husband and I were at Disney World on Marathon Weekend. They didn't know it was Marathon Weekend when they went. The two times I went, I didn't either. Saw people walking around with these beautiful Mickey Mouse medals, and I thought, I have to have one of those. And her husband said, you have to run 26.2 miles for that. And she says, well, I guess I better start training. So that's awesome. So next January she's going to do the half marathon, get her Donald, and then one day get a Mickey when she runs the marathon. She's not a group runner, neither am I, and the groups are great. I think groups make you faster, but I just don't have a group to run with. And she, like me, she loves the peace and solitude that you get when you run alone. So listening to my podcast, she says, is like having a friend alone. So that's awesome. Wendy, thank you very much. And also, I'll play your voicemail in just a few minutes. So hang on. I got a Facebook invite from an old high school friend of mine. Actually, two of them, Paul and Sonia Douglas. And they went to high school with me. I think they were a year before me, or I was a year ahead of them. Paul and I played football together, and he and Sonia got married, I guess, shortly after high school, maybe after college. But we found each other on Facebook, I guess, as everybody does. But she works for a travel agency called Barb's Getaway that's based out of New York, and they do a bunch of travel, especially Disney. And she got into it because an acquaintance of Paul's was a Disney travel agency and a travel agent, and she was interested, so they got the contact number, and next thing you know, she's been doing it since 2007, has booked over 100 trips. So if you're interested in booking a Disney trip, give my old friend Sonia a call, or I guess an email, at sdouglas.barbsgetaway@gmail.com. sdouglas.barbs, B-A-R-B-S, getaway@gmail.com. And also, let's give a shout out to Kim Orline, who is a colleague of Sonia's and listens to the show, and strangely was actually thrilled that Sonia knew me, as if I'm famous or something. I'm just a bald guy with a MacBook. That's all I do. Anyway, so Kim, thank you so much for listening, and Sonia, thanks so much for befriending me on Facebook. And Paul's a great guy. I'm going to tell you a story about Paul that he's going to hate. But back when we played football during spring, our high school had a pretty rigorous spring running program and weight program. And you know, when you're 18, 17, you don't want to do that stuff. You just want to play games. So we thought it would be a great idea to join the track team and throw the shot put and the discus, and that would get us out of the running that the football players had to do in the off season. Well, the coaches caught on, and so what they forced us fat linemen to do at these track meets was not only throw the shot put and the discus, but they also made us run the running events. So we'd have to run the mile relay, or the 800 meter, or the 400. But we had to do some running, and they call it the fat man's relay. Well, one day we're at the track meet, and we didn't have anybody to run for the 800 meters. And Paul was a go-getter, a great guy, and he raises his hand, and he volunteers to run. And the 800 meters, you know, you just can't sprint the whole thing. But they shot the gun, and Paul took off like a bullet, and just he was killing everybody. And he's sprinting for about the first lap. And I think he got about a good lap in, and all of a sudden he started turning red, and like a tomato red. And I barely finished the second lap, and then I think he collapsed later on. He was fine, but he just, you know, nobody taught us how to run, but it's a funny story, and I'll remember it for a long time. Anyway, Paul, sorry about that. It's kind of embarrassing. Sonia, don't tell Paul that I said that. Anyway, capacity for the races coming up in Disney. The half marathon is now about 95% full. As of late April, it's about 95% full. So if you're going to run the half and you have not registered, do it now, or you will lose your shot. They have actually increased the capacity, and I'll talk about that in a minute, of both the half and the Goofy. The Goofy is now about 85% full, I think, 75 to 85% full. They have actually they opened up the Goofy again, because in honor of the 5th anniversary of Goofy, which will be 2010, the Goofy Challenge, they expanded the size from, let me see, Goofy capacity increased to about 7,500 total runners. I'm not sure if it was... Yeah, they had about 4,500 registered last year, and so they've added an extra 3,000 slots this year, or for the 2010 Goofy, in honor of the 5th anniversary. So that's why the Goofy kind of it didn't close as fast as most people expected it to. So if you're thinking about the half of the Goofy, you need to register yesterday. In a hurry. And for information about that, you can go to DisneyEnduranceSeries.com or you can go to DisneyWorldMarathon.com. They'll all take you pretty much to the same site, and you can navigate backwards and find the race that you want. Now, on April 9th, I believe, early April, the Disney Marathon crew, I guess, two people, somebody named Keisha and somebody named Sarah. I've got their full names here. Where are they? Live chat with the Disney Endurance gurus, I guess. What they call the Endurance team. So Keisha and Sarah, and I don't have their last names, but I'll find them in a minute. So anyway, they did a live chat, and some people asked some pretty good questions. It went on. You can find it at DisneyWorldMarathon.com. But a few highlights. There was a question about, will Disney World ever make a dopey medal? The 5K on Friday, and then you've got the half marathon on Saturday, and you've got the full marathon on Sunday, and that's informally called the Dopey Challenge. And so there's no plans to make a dopey challenge of running the 5K, the half, and the full in the same weekend. But they think it's cute that we came, that their guests have come up with that. They are adding additional waves at the start of the half, and I think perhaps the full, to spread the people around the narrow points on the course. There was a question about the earphone debate. They were asking, will Disney drop the ban that the U.S. Track Federation had put on earphones? They said that they don't recommend that you wear headphones, but they don't ban them either. So you can wear them, but they ask that you keep your volume low enough that you can hear announcements or medical alerts. I run with one earphone in one ear and the other one just sort of stuck in my shirt. So like in the morning, if I want to hear a car coming by, I can turn the volume up enough that it's in one earphone and I can have the other one free to hear whatever's coming. That's a great idea if you want to, if you have to have the music to get you going, or like me if you listen to podcasts. There was a question about corral placement. How do they place people in the corrals? Do they use the Peter Riegel formula, which I'd never heard of, or that? I mean, how do they do that? And they said the corral placement is based on predicted time and past race performance. They do not use the Peter Riegel formula. So I'm going to try to do some research on Peter Riegel and see what the Peter Riegel formula is. Sounds kind of scary in a minute, you know. Anyway. Are there plans for doing something special for those of us who are going to complete their 5th Goofy Challenge? And so they said, yes, there are plans to commemorate people's 5th Goofy Challenge. Last year there were 3,300 finishers of the Goofy Challenge. How many people are registered this year? They said last year, 2009, they had 4,500. I guess that's this year. 2009, they had 4,500 registered, and in 2010, they'll take 7,500 Goofy Challengers. That's a lot of people. What's the history behind the Goofy Challenge? Who came up with the idea? And this person said it's uniquely Disney. It is. It's great. I mean, you know, there are some people who run who'd never heard of it. They said they came up with the Goofy Challenge because they were faced with not being able to grow the half and full marathon in a one-day format. They decided to try the unthinkable and go to a two-day format. And so they thought they might have a few hundred people goofy enough to try both races. And it really took off. So the capacity of the runners is this. They've increased the half marathon by 5,000. They've increased Goofy to 7,500. So they've added 5,000 extra slots to the half, and they've increased Goofy from about 4,500 to 7,500. Let's see if there's anything else. That's about it. If you run some of the fall races, like the Tower of Terror and the Expedition Everest and the Race for the Taste 10K, you will get a bonus medal. So if you run two out of the three fall races, let me see, this is how it works. You got to run the Disney Race for the Taste 10K and either the 13K Tower of Terror or the Expedition Everest Challenge, and you get a bonus medal. So if you run the Race for the Taste and then one of the other two, the Tower of Terror or the Expedition Everest, then you'll get a bonus fall race medal. So that's brand new. So you can go, details are at DisneyRaceForTheTaste.com. I guess that's going to do it for email. Any other email I get, I'll put on episode 20. But I do appreciate you emailing in. I do appreciate you leaving feedback on iTunes. We were up to like 32 reviews on iTunes, and I can't tell you how thrilled I am that I've got 32. I never thought I'd have that many. I was you had me at 10. So keep them coming. If you haven't done an iTunes review, please do so. This podcast is now pretty much stuck on the front page of the featured amateur sports and rec podcasts up there with some of the big wigs of running podcasts and other sports related amateur podcasts. So I can't thank you enough. So leave some feedback at iTunes. You can call the voicemail at 206-426-6541. That's 206-426-6541. You can send me an email at gordon@runtodisney.com, G-O-R-D-O-N at runtodisney.com. You can go to runtodisney.com for the blog. What I've been doing is doing a couple of show notes here and there to let you know what's in the episodes. And I'm actually going to write up sort of a Nashville country music half marathon review for episode 20 and put it on the blog, and also talk about that in that episode. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. Following this, there's going to be a few voicemails of first-time callers, long-time listeners, as they call themselves, and then some voicemails from our regulars who are much appreciated. So I really appreciate your voicemail. I really appreciate your email, and I can't thank you enough for listening to the podcast. It's really a lot of fun. It really is. And so hopefully there's something in all this that you can get out of it. But anyway, thanks a lot for listening, and we'll see you in episode 20.
Gordon, it's Jim, the Kilt Runner, Norworth, Pennsylvania. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I've always wanted to say that. I just wanted to wish you well on your rock and roll marathon or half marathon or whatever you're going to do this weekend. I think you probably cut it off at the half marathon since Jason's not going to be able to run the race. And hope you do well. Hope the weather's good and traveling's good and everything's good. I love your podcast. I have so much fun listening to it. You pretty much make me laugh almost every time I'm out on the run. And the reason I wouldn't laugh on those almost times is because I'm probably hurting. But I really enjoy your show. And I especially love it when you talk about history. So if you could do a little bit more of that, I would love that. I love history, okay? And I'm so impressed and excited that you have that kind of a job. I wish I had that job. I'm envious as hell. You take care. Take care and have a good time. And say hello to the Trilogy Boys for me. Ciao. Bye.
Hey, Gordon. It's Dominic. I just finished listening to episode 18 again at work. I seem to listen to the running podcast while I'm at work and other podcasts while I'm running. Kind of weird. Really enjoyed that first part of the interview we had with Lisa Colvin. I'm looking forward to the second part. It was very interesting, and it sounds like you got a really great mentor and friend there. Really helped you out with your half marathon training, and will, I think, continue to help you out with your training. And I might take you up on the offer you said she gave of emailing her for advice. I think that's great. Also, really enjoyed the voicemail you got from Joel about finishing the Illinois Marathon, going through the stadium at Champaign there. I think that'd be pretty awesome. Still think finishing WDW is a little bit better, but then again, you know, if you don't have that Disney bias, you may not think that it's quite as good as a stadium full of people, but still, that was pretty cool. And I just enjoyed to no end how you tormented your son about Club Penguin. I really enjoy those little bits that you put in with your boys because it lets me know sort of what I have coming as my son gets older to their age and what I can do to torment them, to torment him as he gets older. I'm already doing that, he would probably tell you, but It's always good to get tips, too. So looking forward to the next episode, and we'll talk with you soon. Bye.
Hey, Gordon, it's Megan. It is a few minutes before I start, and that's a Boston marathon, and I just wanted to call and say, hey, it's been an amazing morning. It's more than you can imagine, the amount of people and stuff. I'm excited. I'm a little nervous, but trying to keep it all in perspective. They had these cool tattoo pens, and I wrote my kid's name on my hand, my niece's name on my hand, so I can think of them every time I get my hand. And they had tattoos, like temporary tattoos, that say like Boston 26.2. It's pretty cool. Anyways, it's like the ultimate experience. It's really cool. Anyways, I just wanted to say hey and let you know that I'm here and it's exciting. And I will check in with you at some point on course if I can. Otherwise, I'll check in post race.
Bye. Listen to that. Insane.
Hi, Gordon. This is Wendy from Minneapolis, and just calling to thank you for the awesome podcast. I ran my first 10K today, finished in 1 hour and 8 minutes. I think it was about an 11-minute mile pace, and just thankful to have run it. It was my first of that distance, and I'm trying to enjoy my races along the way, but at the same time, they're all just part of steps to my own running to Disney for the half marathon in January. So just really excited about that, and just glad to have your podcast to kind of help me along the way, and yeah, so just wanted to say thanks again, and I've just been really thankful for all the benefits that running has brought me over the last year as I've started, and one of those is definitely the fact that it's introducing me even virtually through podcasts and websites and forums and all that good stuff, just helping me meet a lot of great people in the world, and that just definitely includes you, and just wanted to say thanks again for being encouraging to all of us through your podcast, and all best to you and your family, and thanks again. Bye-bye.